When God Glanced My Way. February is the month in which my AA birthday falls, and as some years have passed since I came into the fellowship, I can now freely admit it's been far more significant for me than my belly button birthday. It's probably because I was aware of the process of being reborn that second time around. I write that last sentence, I must add, not from a religious, evangelical stance, but instead based on the spiritual awakening that we in this fellowship experience when we finally surrender and engage with the programme of recovery. Doing the steps allowed me to begin the process of discarding the many behaviours and masks it was necessary to have when in the full grip of this disease. It was necessary, even imperative, to be deceitful, dishonest, to be utterly reckless when living as an active alcoholic. Interestingly though, what was revealed to me as I wrote my fourth step was that all those defects of character were present long before I ever took my first drink. It was a painful but oddly freeing revelation to me as I filled in those columns to see the way that specific ways of thinking, feeling and acting could be traced right back to when I was a child. I could see that as a young teenager how deceitful and dishonest I could be. I was, at the age of 14, a master of telling half-truths. Yes, I was out on a Friday night ringing the bells at the village church. But no, you wouldn't be told that I'd convinced the boy I had been expressly forbidden to meet up with to join this village activity as well. I could also see how reckless I had been even as a young girl of 8. I was an extremely able pupil in the classroom, but just as importantly, I was known as a risk taker. Being the only girl willing to take a shot of playing a suffocation game in the school playground ensured that I wasn't known as a goody-goody swot. Even then, I could be all things to all people, depending on who was around. And not a drop of alcohol was needed for me to act that way. It was just how I operated when I wanted something. People were there to be played and manipulated. And even though I didn't have those words in my vocabulary back then, the behaviours were most definitely well established in my psyche. Once the alcohol was added, it was these character traits I intuitively drew upon to maintain my addiction to whatever I was taking. As a teenager, I took great pleasure at being able to get away with stuff, and this continued through my years of drinking and using. In my head, I relished my ability to hoodwink whoever and whatever I had to deal with. I inwardly scoffed at people in institutions who fell for my polite, articulate manner. But as the years went on, in the occasional moments of clarity, which would sometimes break through my wave of lies, I would get a knowing, a sense that this great skill I had was actually building a wall of deceit between me and my true self, as between me and everyone else in my life. In those moments of clarity, I would be chilled to the bone, as I, in the space of one heartbeat, would sense the utter sham that my life was. Looking back at those times, which I would invariably smother with another drink or drug, I now believe them to be periods of grace, when the God of my understanding cast a glance my way and lit up for me everything that was wrong in my life. Thank goodness my true self was still in there somewhere, buried deep below, to feel the utter worthlessness as I saw what I had done with the life and the gifts I had been given. My God glanced my way on many occasions in the last few years of my active alcoholism, and I thank him for his determined perseverance to get through to me. There came eventually a time when no amount of drink or drugs could block one of those moments. It happened in a flat in the south side of Glasgow, a flat in which I might have died on any number of occasions. It was a flat where drink and drugs were taken non-stop, and I was a constant fixture. In that flat, on that particular day, I got what I can only describe as some sort of vision. I was, within my very being, transported back to the feelings I had as a young girl, long before I had begun nurturing those defects of character which had served me so well, but really so badly up until that point. Feelings of pure calmness, happiness and joy, of cleanness and love enveloped me, and their very presence, when physically I was in a place of such darkness, violence and death, finally stopped me in my tracks. I'd forgotten I'd ever felt like that. That was the day God glanced my way, and the real me inside leapt with joy. That was the day I got a sneak peek of what I could be if I was willing to stop living the life I was living. At that moment, I didn't know how I was going to get those feelings again, but just knew they wouldn't be found in that flat. And so began my journey into the light and into a fellowship which loves me and supports me, into a fellowship which actively encourages me to do a series of steps which allows me to continue to slough away at the layers of my defects while my sponsor holds a torch to light my work. And it is through this work that I get to experience those feelings of contentment that I was gifted in Govan Hill 11 years ago. I'll end this letter by saying this way of living isn't easy at times. It's hard to be confronted with your defects when you first come in. It's even harder to have versions of them pointed out to you further on down the line. I am thankful, though I may not always appear to be, that I have loved ones in the fellowship who will stop me in my tracks and tell me I still have work to do. Loved ones who will gift me, in this my birthday month, with moments of clarity I may squirm at. And I am thankful I have them in my life. Kate, Partick, Friday, lunchtime.